Suns fans, you know what time it is in the PHX.
Empire of the Suns.
Phoenix Suns.
The Empire of the Suns podcast is brought to you by Sonic. Sonic.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. What's up, dude?
Hello, on this Saturday. We're getting there. About, what, 2 weekish left in the season?
Yeah, so the season is going to end 2 weeks from Sunday. That is on April 14th. That's the last day of the regular season. The play-ins will be that middle of that week. And as we are going to be covering on today's episode, if you were a betting man, that is where you would have the Phoenix Suns right now. I know that the many pessimistic fans right now had this team penciled into the play-in weeks ago. But just we've been strictly going off of the flow of the season, and just not more so the flow of the season, but the flow of the results, I should say. And the flow of the results, especially within the last 2 weeks and how much time is not left anymore, it's really solidifying that as they're standing, isn't it, Kev?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how deep we want to get into it. I think my most honest conversation was with Tim Ring, who's been doing pre and post game shows for us. And I was like, I don't know how you do it every day, because we have covered bad teams before. Obviously, we've covered a pretty good era before this year and even this year, but this year is just so different because it's more baffling, I guess is the word. It's about effort, and you can't really, I mean, even though we podcast once a week, it's hard to talk about effort that frequent. So I want to see if this team has something else we're not seeing when the postseason comes, but kind of right now it's just talking about tiebreakers, standings. You don't know what team is going to show up sometimes. And there's also the whole, like, yeah, this team could be scary. I don't think the Nuggets are, for one example, want to play this team because you don't know what you're going to get. And I'm sure other teams are fearful of, like, they respect the guys on this team. But right now it's just hard to talk about because you just don't know, I guess.
Yeah. And for listeners looking for the pitchforks to come out and for us to start playing the very aggressive blame game and calling for certain players, certain coaches, what have you. We've been doing that to some extent over the course of the season as it is already. And those conversations, for us at least, we're going to choose to have them once the season is over, just in terms of the totality of the conversations and just going really, really in depth. So if you're here for that, apologies. You'll just have to tune in once the season is over. But we've talked a lot about different guys, and we've talked about Vogel, and we've talked about Durant, we've talked about Booker, we've talked about Beal. We've had those conversations a lot this year as it is, and we're honestly just treading water at this point, and until the year is over, unless we see a change. And the reason why we feel this way to open the podcast, Kevin, is because on Saturday they beat the Spurs handily. There's no drama at all. There's no run in the fourth quarter to have Suns fans worried if Spurs are coming back. They take care of business against a bad team, which is something they have not done a whole lot of this year. But then they come back on Monday in the same building. Spurs don't have Wemby and they lose. They go to Denver on Wednesday, play without Jusuf Nurkić. They play a Denver team without Jamal Murray, and they beat them. But then they come back to Oklahoma City on Friday, yesterday, and play an OKC team without SGA, which sounds like the Suns should be favorites in that game, and they actually became the betting favorites in Vegas. I did not agree with that. I thought the Suns were still pretty healthy underdogs in that game. And it showed pretty quickly why. And we're just at a point now with the team where the results are the same. Everything is blending together. There is no, you can play like the, you never know what to expect with this team card. You can play the, whenever they're playing star without teams without stars, they seem to like, we can have these conversations if we want to, but it's really just the same conversation in different ways over and over again. And we're not going to do it. We're not going to make you guys endure that, if that's the right word. We're just going to talk about other things instead. One thing from these games that we should talk about, Kevin, besides the usual play from this team, I guess we could shout out Durant's performance on Wednesday if we wanted to, but honestly, like, that should be the standard for him going forward. He's one of the best players in the world, and you should have at least a quarter of the games this year you come away from where you're like, that's the best player in the world. That's the guy this team gave up their whole future for. Was that guy, and we haven't seen enough of that guy this year. We didn't see him in the postseason last year, and the Suns are going to need to see him in the postseason, whatever you want to phrase it as, this coming year to go there. So we won't really dive into that too heavily. Why isn't Thad Young playing? I know that people have been asking this a lot when Thad Young hasn't been playing at all, but he goes in there and plays on Monday or on Wednesday, excuse me, when Nurkic is out. It's clearly impactful. Is clearly impacting the game on both ends in the way that Drew Eubanks can't. And then Drew Eubanks checks in on Friday off the bench. What's going on here?
Yeah. I mean, the Nuggets game, you know, 18 minutes, 6 points, 9 rebounds, 2 assists, steal, like, is moving the ball, is swinging to the second side on short rolls, is a plus 15 to lead the team. Hangs on defense, doesn't look like physically he looks fine. And I guess I'll say, like, when you're older, like, maybe he plays 18 minutes one day and that he's like, I just need a couple days off or something like that. I don't know if that's a thing with him. I'm just saying that that could be a thing. That's the only guess I have, though, is what I'm trying to get at. I mean, I just love the knows where to be, moves the ball, didn't have a turnover in 18 minutes, and is, you know, he's touching the ball a lot. He's doing the same things Nurk is asked to do. So yeah, I mean, and that's where, like, Eubanks is still having those patches where it's just like, oh man, like, first few minutes, just mistakes pile on top of one another. And I mean, I won't get into it super a lot, but I think it was the San Antonio loss where there's just a sequence where Durant makes like 3 or 4 mistakes in a row, and it's effort and execution. And finally, like, they have a timeout, and then Eubanks does the exact same thing on the possession out of the timeout. It just doesn't. Those are the mind blowing moments for me. And you're talking about a star player and a guy who is arguably should not or should be in the rotation, however you see it. So it's everyone. But yeah, I mean, Thad Young, that's promising. I guess we should mention also Isaiah Thomas on a second 10-day sign today. And I will say that if we talk about leadership and all that good stuff, I think Thad and Isaiah, they probably are like, these guys at the very least are important to have in our locker room. They're talking to the guys. I saw one timeout where Isaiah Thomas walked up to Booker and starts like having the conversation about something that he looked like he should have done, and Book's having the back and forth with him. And it's just like those voices, guys who have been around, don't care about, like, they've earned their way into this league. Like, they're telling these guys stuff. I don't know if they're going to be rah-rah guys, but they're at least kind of balancing out, like, the things where we see Eubanks go through it. So those guys are important. I'm going to say that, and I'll leave that there. But yeah, I mean, we're going to find out what the true rotation looks like. I mean, it wasn't much of a rotation against OKC, and that's until the later minutes when they were like done, blown out. That's the kind of stuff where it's like, we haven't developed anything to this point.
Yeah. To go back to that, I think it's one of two things. It's what you mentioned, which is that at his age, with the state of his body where it is, maybe it's just a physical inability to go every night. So I'll hold off on complete judgment there. Or this is the latest case of something I've talked about, especially the back half of the season, but pretty much all year, which is my feeling that it might just be Vogel's inability to change his philosophical beliefs to what the team, what suits this roster. And again, that goes to putting him in a position to succeed, as well as him putting the roster he has in a position to succeed. And those two things clearly have not meshed together at all this year, to say the least. But OKC is like a perfect stylistic matchup to play Thad anyway, which made it all the more baffling as to why he wasn't out there. But yeah, the mistakes and the conversations thing is crazy, because I think it was Durant and Booker themselves talking during a huddle in OKC. And it looked like they were like having a conversation about trying to get on the same page about where to be on defense. And it's March 29th, Kevin, like it's crazy. It's crazy that it keeps happening, and we'll leave it at that. So a lot to unpack here. Just a standings update for those of you that are sort of using the podcast as your primary vacuum to stay informed. I encourage you, if you're still on Twitter or if you're off Twitter, but you check it for news updates or whatever, pretty much every night I'm tweeting out results that impact the Suns and their standings, because that's kind of where we're at right now. But if you haven't been doing that, or you haven't been checking yourselves or in another way, right now we're basically at a three-team race at the top three. Not the Suns' concern right now. The Clippers are 46-27. That is four fewer losses than the Phoenix Suns. They had a big win last night against Orlando. They've squeaked out, I believe, two in the last week, where they easily could have lost it in the last 5 minutes, but it wound up being they were the least inept of the two teams. They are pretty much in a position right now where the Suns cannot catch them. That's not even going off of schedule necessarily. We're just talking a four-game gap with eight games to go. The Clippers' schedule coming up, they've got a game at Charlotte on Sunday, and then they've got two games against Utah. So those are two games to keep an eye on with the schedule. And then, of course, there are two games against the Suns. The Suns have to beat the Clippers in both of those games in order to have any sort of chance of potentially catching them, but I think it's pretty much done at this point. The New Orleans Pelicans are 45-28. That is three fewer losses than the Suns. Now, again, the Suns have two head-to-head matchups against New Orleans, so perhaps there's some thinking there to where they could catch them. In terms of the schedule for the Pelicans, they are home against San Antonio, at Portland. Are there two layups left on the schedule with their nine games left? They've got a game just tipping off here in about a half an hour on Saturday afternoon against Boston. They've got Orlando, the two against Phoenix I mentioned, Sacramento, Golden State, and Los Angeles. You figure they're not going to go 0-4 against those teams. Those aren't necessarily the elite of the teams, because they're kind of in this play-in wild card mix, whatever you want to call it specifically. I think the Pelicans are also in a spot where the Suns won't really get to catch them. That leaves the sixth spot, which is more or less what we've been talking about for the last month, right, Kevin? And Dallas, unfortunately, is for Suns fans, they're 9-1 in their last 10. They've won six in a row. We kind of forecasted this a couple weeks ago because of how light their schedule is. They're 44-29 right now. The Suns are only two back, but they are down in the tiebreaker. So they're essentially three back, and Dallas's schedule is pretty easy. Now, it looked like a cakewalk when Houston was a cakewalk, Kev, but they've won 11 in a row. So they've got Houston at Houston on Sunday. That is a huge game in terms of this sixth spot. And then they've got Golden State, Atlanta, Golden State, Houston, Charlotte, Miami, Detroit, and then Oklahoma City on the last game of the year, where Oklahoma City might be resting guys. You don't necessarily know. But I think those five games specifically, not only for the 10-11 spot for Houston and Golden State competing against each other potentially, but for locking up this sixth spot and sending some clarity there, we'll have to wait and see. But based on everything I told you, Kevin, it looks like, and from what you think yourself, again, like playing, right?
I think we're in play-in mode. I mean, 1.5 games doesn't seem like a lot, but at this point, when you have 8-9 games left, everyone, like, that might be toast, especially considering the trends they're going on. And now we're just like, okay, Suns have just got to be in the top of the play-in. You want to be able to lose one maybe and get out of it if you have a bad game. And our bar of expectations is quickly sinking here, I would say.
It has, to say the least. Looking a little bit lower, the Kings are at 42 and 31. The Suns are 43 and 31, so they're right next to each other. That makes all the more pressing the April 12th game, which is the second to last regular season game of the year for the Suns. That is in Sacramento. And that is a game where the tiebreaker will be determined. So that game could very well determine both with the win or the loss impacting the team's record on its own. But then if like a win for this team and a loss for that team ties them up, then that tiebreaker could end up being the difference. They're 2-2 against each other right now. So that fifth game could ultimately decide it. I did mention for the Clippers and the Pelicans, the Clippers right now, the Suns have lost both their games to the Clippers. They have those two left. So if they win those two, they would need to catch them on division record, which I believe still favors the Clippers as of now. And then the Pelicans, that tiebreaker right now, the Suns won that first game against New Orleans. They just need to win one of two. But again, they pretty much need to beat the Clippers both times. They need to beat the Pelicans both times to really give themselves any sort of chance here. And then they need to win probably at least two of those other four games remaining. Anything else,
by the way,
bud?
The Kings, are down Malik Monk. I think that's MCL sprain. So that's... I would assume
Kevin Herter,
not good for the regular season.
Yeah, Kevin Herter out for the year. That was a thing that developed within the last week. And they are a deep team, quote unquote, in that like their first couple of guys that you call upon are pretty great. Like I you know me, I'm a Vezinkov guy. I don't even know if he's playing right now, to be honest, for them, but I've always been a guy for him. I think he's been in and out of their rotation more or less. But Malik Monk, a sixth man of the year guy that's been kind of in the running right now. Trey Lyles has been good for them. We've been a fan of his stuff. But now with these injuries, Kevin, and Monk, as you mentioned, could have a sprained MCL. And that's the type of thing where if he misses 2 weeks, they might be in the play-in fade as well. And now they're looking at like more Davion Mitchell minutes, more Duarte minutes, more Keon Ellis minutes, which they've already had to do because of the Herter injury. So they're in a tough spot, like you said.
Yeah. And then like Lakers, Warriors, they've kind of separated from the Rockets by Rockets are still a game out of the Warriors, even though they've won 11. And I'm like double checking that that's correct, that they haven't caught the Warriors yet. So yeah, the end of the play-in is also a little competitive. So those teams are definitely trying to, you know, stay afloat. And I think the Kings at least are safe of not missing the playoffs entirely. If I'm doing quick math, they should be fine. Just win a couple games here or there. But yeah, it's the Rockets are still hovering in there.
Yeah, either what's going to happen is the Rockets are going to beat the Mavericks in both of those games within the week. And we're not only talking about the six suddenly being open. If the Suns or the Kings keep win as well in the meantime, and we're talking about not only that, but the Rockets jumping as well, or the Mavericks just beat the Rockets in both of those games, take care of business in their other games. And we're talking about the definitive 10 teams as well as the Mavericks like separating the gap, and we have like our play-in teams kind of solidified. But then again, like the Warriors could keep losing as well. The Warriors, meantime, they've won three in a row. Like they haven't been dropping off necessarily. The Lakers are 7-3 in their last 10. So those teams necessarily haven't been falling off, but they just have to keep up with the team that's won 11 straight. And that's pretty difficult to do. Cats talk to end it.
Oh man. Yeah. Surprised. I was not.
No. All of my friends were talking about how much of a lock Arizona was for their parlays or whatever. And I told them how much I hated that. And I hated how everything I was reading in terms of like predictions and all this kind of stuff, how Clemson is like the best matchup for any team left in the tournament and all this stuff. I hated it. And yeah, it was just every compounded problem, right? Like, what did you think watching the game?
I mean, it'd been happening since the end of the regular season where their two best players in Caleb Love and Pelle Larsson were not playing great. I will talk about the head coach in a second, I'm sure, but it's not good that players just lose their confidence, like to not even to bad degrees on this team. Like Tubelis, what, 2 or 3 years ago? I guess it'd be two, but just like couldn't play basketball. He couldn't catch a basketball suddenly in the postseason. Kylan Boswell, I have no idea what happened with him. He like couldn't even score 5 points in like four of the last five games. He had a one really good game. I think that was Dayton, right? Jaden Bradley was their best player, which is like good if it's like you have two guards off the bench who can be your best guards, but also that's bad because your two best players are also in the starting lineup not performing. So it's just like if they had gotten all of their best games together, that's why on paper they look good, but they hadn't done that all season. I wasn't surprised. There's going to be a point guard conundrum that we hit soon, if it's not already happening, about whether Boswell comes back, because like I would do everything I could to keep Jaden Bradley around and be your starting point guard next year.
Yeah, I think that Umar Balo's progress as a player, he stagnated this year for the most part, but with that in mind, like he got much, much better last year and then he sort of stagnated this year. I don't know how much Pelle Larsen improved as a four-year player, but not a lot. Not as a four-year player here specifically, excuse me, but just with his track record with Arizona over the last, I believe, three seasons. He started at Utah, excuse me, for a year. But then Boswell especially. My biggest thing with college basketball is that these players are so young and so malleable that they can improve a lot just from November to March as it is. And they can especially improve a ton over a year or two. Like we see that in the NBA all the time, but in college, especially, like a year-to-year transformation for a guy can just be night and day completely. And I haven't seen that within this program at all in the last 3 years under Tommy Lloyd. I haven't seen it. Balo's been the only example, but again, he got much better last year, but then he didn't take any more steps forward this year. I thought that he was more or less the same player this year, which was a good one, but I didn't see Pelle Larsen get much better. I saw Kylan Boswell get worse. So how much of that is on the coaches? How much is that on the players? It's a tale as old as time. I tend to lean more towards the coaches in these kinds of situations. And the thing that frustrated me the most about watching that game is that the first 8 minutes, which lost them the game because they were immediately back in it once they started attacking the basket, is no one was even touching the paint. And it's like, how is that not your message coming into every single game? One, and if it is, how is it not getting through to the players? And how is this not your message like five games into the season? Like, how long have you been on these guys about getting to the basket and how it opens up your offense? Because no one else drives except for Bradley. And Love started doing it a little bit more in the middle of the game along with Bradley, but Bradley was their best player in the tournament. He was phenomenal in the game to get to the Sweet 16. And then he was incredible in this game. He was trying to literally win it on his own on both ends of the floor. Like he was committing fouls on the other end just because he was trying to get the ball every time because no one else was going to get a stop but him.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that is happening. And that speaks to a failure in coaching to me. And it also speaks to a failure in identifying what you need. Like to slightly bring in Arizona State for a second, I have no idea how it took so long for Bobby Hurley to get someone like Frankie Collins, who's a quote unquote natural point guard, but then Frankie Collins quickly realized this wasn't a system adept for a regular point guard. So he became a scoring guard. It happened in the first game he played for Arizona State. So here it's the same thing where why are you not just building your roster around slashers? Like you need people who get to the basket for your system to work. Like you had it with Benedict Mathurin, you had it with Dalen Terry. And now you don't have that element of your team anymore that makes your team what it is. You have the size, but it's not size. It's the penetration to get within the basket, and it's the spacing to maintain your size. He had the spacing part down to a certain extent, but he didn't have the slashing. So I think that the program should be viewed as one in a precarious position going into the Big 12. I don't know how many people feel that way, but he's 4-3 in the tournament now. And he is going to, if you're not familiar, the Big 12, arguably the best basketball conference in the country. I believe they had like 7 to 9 ranked teams last year. Again, there are 25 ranked teams and they had a third of them. So he's going to have to go in there and be a top four finish in that conference in probably what's going to be a transitional year, depending on how good his freshmen are and how good he does in the portal. And he's going to have to prove that not so much that he's a one-trick pony, but that the majority of his success wasn't contingent on playing in a weak conference, because now he's going from a weak conference to this conference. And again, this is coming from a graduate of the school, someone who gave their money to the school to get a degree from it, that's been rooting for the school since he was 5 years old, that he has to maintain the elite status of this program because it's an elite basketball program, and that's just not good enough. Like, not making an Elite Eight with a 1, a 2, and a 2 is inexcusable. It's terrible.
Yeah. I think the Big 12, like, there are going to be definitely more losses. I'm curious if being more competitive on a game-to-game regular season basis, like, will make him have to coach more and not be so chill about, oh, we lost to, you know, Oregon State, which is a random team or whatever, and take these things more seriously and develop. Because like you said, like, I thought Caleb Love, for example, came over from North Carolina with the reputation of just chucking and just being a scorer. Like, I thought he played the regular season actually pretty well. Like, they got the messages across, but then he spiraled back into being Caleb Love, who just takes bad shots and doesn't drive. And my biggest complaint is he and Pelle Larsen, I think athletically and skill wise, could have driven and done the things that you were talking about more often, and they just didn't. And that is coaching, because I think they had the talent and the athleticism to do that. So yeah, I mean, it's like we went from the Sean Miller two hands on, gets rigid on offense in tough tournament situations, to Arizona, which just didn't have enough discipline to do the right things on offense or to be coached to look for certain things, and certainly didn't show up on defense either, even though they were a pretty darn athletic team and capable team of playing defense. So it's going to be interesting, man. Like, I'm not on team fire Tommy Lloyd unless you have like if Coach Calipari was like let go at Kentucky or something, then I'd be like, oh, there's your thing. If you want to keep an elite coach in there and recruit well and bring attention to the program. But this year is going to be an important one. I will say that.
Yeah. I don't think they should fire him, to be clear. I was semi joking a couple episodes ago when I said that. I don't think that they should fire him. I think that what they should do is what needs to change is like the narrative around him. Like, I think that he needs to be viewed as someone who is under pressure. And I don't think that that's like ever going to happen, especially with the extension that he got like a week after I said that. But I don't know. Maybe I do think he should get fired. I still haven't really like decided. Now that this actually happened, I still have to figure out how I feel about it. Because it's only been a couple of days and I'm still mad and sad about it. But I think that it's just, I want it to be viewed in a certain way. And I'm glad that like a couple of like stats went viral and things like that, of just like how this continues to happen. And it's like, you think about Kansas and how they always go out early. Like, you think about all these other teams that always go out early. And it's like for Arizona to kind of become either that team or the team that fails to meet up expectations when they get there, is pretty brutal. Do you know who has their COVID years left still? Of the seniors, by the way, like Pella still has his, right?
Technically, I think all of them do. But I think just what they've said is all of them are leaving basically, except Boswell as far as the starters.
Yeah.
So
yeah, so I'm with you. I think that they need to do everything they can to keep Bradley. And you wrote a story about Boswell's quotes where it was some like this year, this offseason, I need to completely change a bunch of different things, which I like the accountability and I like how the self-awareness of showing that in that, like, yep, I'm very aware that this year was not good for me and I didn't take the steps forward I needed to. But then it also makes you wonder, like, what exactly is going on there? What's his dynamic with Lloyd? All that kind of stuff. Because again, this is someone who at the start of the season I thought was talented enough and thought like 10 games in was the best point guard they've had in 25 years, but that quickly spiraled. I actually think that you wrote that it probably doesn't make sense to keep them both. I would want them to keep them both and start them both because I don't think they're going to be able to find a better option. But it's whether the two of them are okay with that.
Yeah.
I was in a scrum in Tempe after they beat ASU, and the two of them said, or I think it was Jaden who said it. It was one of the two because they were talking together, and they said, like, I think we actually play the best when we play together. And the other one like nodded a lot as in like, yep, I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
So if they're down to like share the ball, then I think that they should do that because they fit each other really well. And it's college. Like, I don't think you have to worry about having like two point guard size guys out there. I think you can get by with it as long as you have size elsewhere. And I know that their top ranked freshman is a huge wing big combo kind of thing. That's good. And then they got Krivas off the bench as well. Hopefully Morauskas, who I've been shouting about on the podcast all year, develops into something next year because he's like the kind of off-ball shooter that they've been like them going 3 years without like the like Sam Hauser type, the Duncan Robinson type, you know, like where is that guy? Where's the guy who just takes threes? Like, that's all he does.
Morauskas, like, and Philip Buravichin. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, that guy.
But those two guys, yes.
Like the guy on Clemson, Gerard, who takes like 11 shots and eight of them are threes. Like, where's that guy? They need that guy.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we'll see. But yeah, I just don't feel good about the state the program's in, which doesn't make sense because of the amount of success they've had over the 3 years. But again, I'm redefining what success is here. And I don't think it was successful until it wasn't with the amount of, if they would have made the Elite Eight, or the Final Four, the Mathurin, Terry, Coloco year, then I think I'd feel a little differently, but alas, I do not.
All right, we good?
I think we're good. Yeah, we can have an updated Cats talk in like September or something, or whenever like transfer portal stuff happens, like the Caleb Love equivalent, and restructure the talks and see what the like preseason polls have for them, you know, because I think they're going to be, I'm curious to see where like those kind of rankings have them, because I don't even know if they're going to be a ranked team next year based on what they have coming back right now. But transfer portal times, it's very early.
Yep. Unsure. As for those Phoenix Suns, Pels, Cavs, mm-hmm. T-Wolves, Pels again. We'll probably podcast somewhere around there, somewhere in there.
Yeah, that Thursday or Saturday, I'm guessing, after these three games or two games. But Cleveland does have Donovan Mitchell back, I believe. New Orleans still waiting for Ingram to get back, but they're doing just fine without him. And then Minnesota is still really, really darn good. So we'll see if they can replicate any of those Denver performances. And talk about it when we come back next time. See ya.